we just have to look at your ticket and see where your seat is.
So, today is the appearance day of Sri Advaita Acharya. And the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that he's non-different from Krishna, and therefore he's Advaita, non-dual. And he teaches the whole world, therefore he's Acharya. I read something about him today. He was actually born in Shailet. He was born in the same place as Mahaprabhu's father, Jagannath, from that same place in what is today Bangladesh, Shailet. Probably get a more authentic pronunciation there.
Shailet.
And here's an interesting fact, at least according to Wiki Shastra, that Advaita Acharya was 50 years older than Lord Chaitanya. Just by an age difference. 50 years older. And so he was like almost, well, you could say like a, well, he was like a grandfather, really, to Lord Chaitanya in terms of age. And commonly it is said that he is Mahavishnu or Sada Shiva, an eternal form of Shiva, not a temporary demigod. So you could say, how could this be? And there's a simple explanation, these multiple identities, at least in the case of Vishnu Tattva. That is, the good news is we are monotheists. And I really would be uncomfortable as a polytheist. We are monotheists, and that there is one God. And so the very name Advaita means that Advaita really is Krishna. So Krishna has, as we know, infinite opulences, and he can manifest those opulences as much or as little as he likes in different expansions. For example, every one of us is a complete person, and we all have our, so to speak, our bag of tricks. You know, we have our personalities, we have a certain amount of knowledge. We, you know, it's us. Whoever you are, that's who you are. In a particular situation, you choose to manifest more or less of yourself. To open yourself or close yourself, to be, you know, just tell people everything about yourself, or maybe tell people very little about yourself, or... So, but it's still you. It's just all you. And so to say that Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu and Sadashiva is simply to say that Krishna has manifested that combination of qualities or potencies in him. But actually, there's only one God, and that's Krishna. So, it is an amazing thing that there's... I remember a Hinduism textbook I read in preparation for the course I gave at the University of Florida. The author was making the point, I think it was Klaus Klostermeyer, his book. He was making the point that the avatara phenomenon, or the avatara manifestations, really are a Vaishnav feature. And that, just as I say, keeping up with the Joneses, there's sort of been an attempt historically, let's say from the Shaiva side, often to keep up with the Vaishnavas, you know, to remain competitive. And so just as you have these, you know, most powerful, most culturally influential texts like Mahabharata, Ramayana, and Bhagavatam, so on the Shaiva side, or even Shakta side, sort of the, you know, the bronze medalist Shakta tradition, you have these periodic attempts to come up with a full range of spiritual products. It's like, I'm not mocking these other traditions, I'm just trying to give a simple example. It's just like, let's say if you're a car manufacturer, Ford or General Motors or Mercedes or, you know, Toyota, you know, you need a luxury vehicle, a mid-sized vehicle, small, compact, you need an SUV, a sport model. They're just like, you know, there's just the market, just if you want to have a full range of products in the market, they're just things you need to have. You know, pickup truck. And so, in the same way, because the Mahabharata and Ramayana and other literatures of Bhagavatam were so influential, so there were attempts to write, you know, there's the Devi Bhagavata, and there are, you know, Shaiva literatures, and so on, but they just, whatever importance they have, and they're not, it's not that they have no importance, but it's just, it can't really be compared to the influence that the Vaishnava literature has had. I remember I read a book written by a South Indian scholar when I was at Harvard explaining that the evidence is that the original great, like, megalithic temples in India were Vaishnava temples, and then, of course, Shaiva temples were built also. But so, again, this is, so you take the avatars, or attempts to sort of come up with different avatars of Shiva, but it didn't really fly. And so if you look at the Shaiva tradition, of course, when we're talking about Shiva, not just a Shiva who suddenly morphs into some impersonal light or, you know, whatever, but the extent to which we're talking about the person Shiva, he's just sort of always Shiva. Like, whenever he appears, it's just Shiva. It's him. Whereas Krishna, you know, comes as Krishna or Balaram or Advaita Acharya or Varaha, Kurma, Narsingadev, Vamana, all these very famous incarnations. Or as Vishnu or Narayan, Ramchandra. So that, and you can't, contrary to what some academics think, you can't really successfully long-term invent religions. And so it's not just, well, the Krishna story is just somehow had more literary pizzazz or whatever, or because Vishnu was the Sattva Devata, the deity for those in goodness, therefore he was the special deity of the Brahmins in general. And so, you know, the smartest guys were sort of the Vaishnavas. Obviously, there are Shaiva Brahmins, but in general, you could say, you know, the Vaishnavas had more verminical firepower, came up with better stories. But I think that's really an extremely naive explanation. You know, it's almost like when you try too hard, you end up becoming the opposite of what you're trying to do. It's like trying too hard to be funny, and you're kind of depressing. So, you know, when you try too hard to be intellectually sophisticated, you sort of end up being extremely naive. And so, the avatars work because they're real people. And so, it's really Krishna or Vishnu, or as I say, you know, it's at home it's Krishna, and then when he goes to the office it's Vishnu. Just like, you know, maybe, you know, it's like you know, Dr. Stevenson at the office, but at home it's just Poopsie or something. So anyway, so it's really an exclusive feature of Krishna, not only culturally and historically, but just actually. It really is Krishna, about whom one could say advaitam, achyutam, anadim, anantarupam. Krishna, although it's interesting, because in literatures like the Mahabharata, you have these rakshasas, Or even in 10th Canto of the Bhagavatam, these sort of Kamsa's clients, you know, came to Vrindavan. They have this power of Kama Rupa, literally like wish forms or desire forms, whatever form they desire they take. And yet Krishna really is the original Kama Rupa, not in a dangerous, demonic, Rakshasa sense, but Krishna is the original Kama Rupa. He expands into unlimited forms. So what does this tell us about God? And if you consider, for example, the basic premise of what is called natural theology, the idea that by studying the creation, you can understand the Creator, which, as Ramanuja points out, is true only to some extent. Because, I mean, try it. Go to a museum and look at the paintings of someone about whom you know absolutely nothing, and then write his biography and see what you come up with. You know, test that theory. So, I guess with Van Gogh, you come to the conclusion that he was a person that had some kind of condition where he constantly vibrated at very high speed. Anyway, so but the sense of natural theology, you understand the Creator by studying the creation or the creatures. To some extent, it's true. I mean, you can know something. There is causality when reasonably and profoundly traced back, does yield some information. Even Prabhupada said that, you know, you have your father, his father, his father. So go back and then. But if you look at Krishna's own expansions, as Advaita Acharya's Varaha, that's two in one. Varaha, Korma, Vamana, Singhadev, Balaram, Ramchandra, and so on. If you look at Krishna's expansions, then you can really start to understand something about God by seeing not simply the way he expands what he himself calls his separated energy, his bhinna prakriti, but he expands himself. So it's really him. And then it's, Krishna is very much at times, an out-of-control adolescent. I mean, but of course, it's the very positive sense of it. Like, I mean, he does amazing things. It's like in this world, adultery is not a good thing. But when Krishna dances with the gopis, it becomes the most amazing thing. So similarly, Krishna, the story where Brahma, the creator Brahma, like everyone, felt, you know, something in his nose and he had to get out. That happens to even in the best of sampradayas. So, imagine he snorts something out of his nose, and of course, you know, there's kind of like this irresistible temptation to want to see what came out. Of course, you know, in polite company, you might not look, but if you're by yourself, you might look. So,
how did he actually
what?
Out.
I don't know, something, it came, and then he looked at it, and it was like this, anyway, I mean, colloquial language, it wasn't a,
yeah.
But he looked at it, and you know, even something very small, if it has a precise, sophisticated form, you kind of, you know, notice that, a very small thing with a sophisticated form. So Brahma looked at it, and like, whoa. And then it started growing. And then it actually took on a cosmic size. Or no, was that Brahma or the king? They're different stories, isn't different versions.
I've heard Brahma.
Yeah.
I thought it was Brahma.
Yeah. But then there's another story with Satya. What's the king? The king on the boat.
Oh, you're saying Matsya?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's Kurma. That's Varaha. Yeah, of course, I'm mixing things up, of course. Okay, I'm mixing Leelas. This is, I guess, Leela Sankara. okay, but still, the fish thing, same thing. You know, I kept trying to, could you please get me a bigger aquarium? And then a bigger one, you know, pond, a lake, a sea. Amy, so what can you reasonably deduce about the nature of God? Extremely playful and just, fun-loving. Not in the sense of, the negative material sense of seeking gratification, but just very jovial, very fun, very youthful, doing what we would call far-out things. And what the Bhagavatam says is theatrical. I mean, coming as a fish, imagine, he's Krishna's the original and supreme surfer. And what do surfers do? They want to catch waves, but what better way to catch waves than to be a fish? And the biggest waves, you know, surfers, they just go all around the world looking for the big waves. Basically, the point is you keep searching till you find one big enough to kill you, and then you're satisfied. But anyway, they are always looking for these big waves. And so what does Krishna do? First of all, he comes as a fish, so talk about, doesn't need a board. He has the built-in board. And then he surfs the waters of annihilation. I mean, do you realize how big those waves are? The waters of annihilation? Like,
in 2012.
I'd like to see that on YouTube, you know, Matsya surfing the waters of annihilation.
Except that being a wipeout.
Yeah, so, I mean, Krishna. And he comes at Dvaitacharya, and he, of course, Advaita is known for many things. Advaita is known as a very poignant scene where apparently for a little over a year he offered Ganga Jal, Ganges water, to the Ganges. Because actually, it's interesting, in the Bhagavatam you have all these verses that talk about Krishna as being the, in the Sanskrit word, adana, the ingredient cause. So because Krishna says that the whole physical or material creation is his energy, there actually isn't anything else to offer to Krishna except Krishna's energy. There isn't anything else. In fact, when I was a child, and it was my mother's or father's birthday, and the other parent would give me some money or take me out to get something, because I was a child, I didn't have any money. I mean, when I was, I think, 6 or 7, I got my first dollar. I mean, so for a couple of years I had $1, but I wasn't going to spend it because, you know, it was my only dollar. But, so really there isn't anything else to offer except Krishna's own energy. There isn't anything else. In fact, in one of the four essential Bhagavatam verses, Krishna says that Ritayartam Japratiyeta Napratiyeta Chatmani, that anything that presents itself to your consciousness, which you do not see within me, actually is meaningless. It's actually meaningless. It's an illusion. Tad vidyat atmano mayam. Know that to be my illusory potency. So there isn't anything else except, so Advaita, even though he's Krishna himself, he's showing that he's the Acharya, the Sanskrit word achara, of course, means conduct, and acharya literally means conductible. In the sense of, it almost has a gerundive flavor to it, in the sense of conduct which is worthy to be emulated. I like to say that so-and-so's conduct is conductible, behavable, in the sense that it's worthy of being followed. So he was praying. In that famous line, he was praying that, you know, if you don't come and save the world, I'm just going to wrap it up here. So, So Advaitacharya really bringing Krishna down as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then, of course, being a very, well, of course, he's the third plenary member of the Panchatattva. In the Panchatattva, we have three plenary forms of Krishna, actually his original form, and in the Nityananda's Balaram Advaita as Vishnu or Mahavishnu, and then you have Krishna's internal potency, Gadadhar, and Srivas, who is Jiva, the pure Jiva. So Advaita, he's a very powerful figure. In fact, Krishnadas Kaviraj makes some very interesting statements in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where, and these statements clearly indicate that even back then, during his time, which was just a generation after Lord Chaitanya, there were schisms. And there were deviant movements, because he makes statements like, if you accept Mahaprabhu but don't accept Nityananda, that's not acceptable. And he gives the example that his own brother, Krishnadas Kaviraj's own brother, fell down because he didn't accept Nityananda. And there are other statements that if you accept Nityananda or Chaitanya but don't accept Advaita, or if you accept Advaita but don't accept... So there were people actually were saying that Advaita is the main avatar. There were actually different theories. There were different interpretations of these figures. And you see that right in the CC. It's right in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this thing of deviations and schisms and everything, I mean, it even happened back then. So, but... without going for now into all the details of these deviations, as we can sort of, you know, try to retrieve them from this literature, the point is that Advaita was very important. I mean, he was so important that apparently he had his own following and some people who didn't understand his relationship to Lord Chaitanya. But still, he was obviously a powerful, dominant figure. He was a very important figure. And so either... you know, the bona fide understanding or even the deviations somehow involved him just because he was so important. It's just like people that deviate from Prabhupada's wishes and game plan for the world or set up schismatic organizations. Still, they have to talk about Prabhupada or even honor Prabhupada, because even people that deviate from Prabhupada still have to honor him just because he's so important. And you can't be taken seriously unless you, in some way, acknowledge him. And so, Advaita had that kind of status. I mean, he was a very important figure. And so even people that didn't get it right still had to acknowledge him in some way or talk about him. And of course, there's that very famous story where he felt he wasn't receiving enough attention from Lord Chaitanya, so he went to the basically the town square and started preaching impersonalism. Then Chaitanya came there and threatened him, and then he started dancing in ecstasy. This is what I wanted. Of course, he was 50 years older than Lord Chaitanya, but that really doesn't matter very much because he's God. And so he ages very well. In other words, he's obviously a spiritual form. But Advaita Acharya is so, he lived in Shantipur. Even that, you know, he apparently there was a lot of people, for whether it was economic reasons or political reasons, whatever it was, there were a lot of Vaishnavas who were moving from Bangladesh to West Bengal. I mean, Lord Chaitanya's father, Advaita Acharya, so, I mean, I'm sure you could study that. There must have been, sometimes it's for political reasons or financial reasons, whatever, but people were moving west for some reason. And Advaita Acharya also came west. Go west, young avatar, go west. So it's Krishna loves us so much, Krishna cares about us so much, that he not only comes as Mahaprabhu but becomes in various forms as Nityananda, as Advaita. And of course, we worship the Panchatattva as the Panchatattva. And some people So Advaita, that's what I'm saying, he came to Shantipur. And even the name of that place, Shantipur, I think means something. To me, the fact that he chose, because he could do anything, he's all powerful, he chose to live in a place with the name Shantipur, means that he really is the abode of peace, that we can actually find peace in Advaita Acharya. That if we take shelter of Advaita Acharya, we find real peace. And in that song by Narottam Das Thakur, Ha Prabhu Sita Pat Sita Pati Shrita Poti. How would you say?
Shrita Poti.
Advaita Gosai. Tava Kripa Bole Pai. I mean, Narottam says it best. Narottam is a pure devotee. That on the strength of your mercy, Tava Kripa Bole Pai. Pai, sort of like Bengali thing, I think, from Ap, you know, Apnoti, one achieves. The Tava Kripa Bole Pai, Chaitanya Nitai, one that I will achieve Chaitanya and Nitai. It's a very interesting statement, I will achieve them, I will attain them, in the sense that our natural relationship with Krishna is so intimate, we are part of him, that when we really revive that relationship, we really have them as, I mean, obviously, we belong to them. But there's a sense in love where we belong to each other because there's that most intimate possible relationship where you're actually part of someone else. But it's on the strength of Advaita's mercy. It's on the strength of Advaita's mercy that we achieve Chaitanya Nitai. That is so significant because achieving the mercy, achieving the association of Gorni Tai is everything. Is everything. I mean, what else would you want to achieve? So, but on the strength of his mercy, Advaita's mercy, Tava Kripa Bole, the strength of your mercy, achieve Chaitanya Tai. So today is Advaita Acharya's appearance day. Again, he was born approximately 50 years before Lord Chaitanya. In northeast, what is now Bangladesh, side, how do you say it? Shoilu.
Oh, Shoilu.
So that's so. Yeah, there's such a. These days are so wonderful, these, I mean, avatar birthdays. It's, yeah, thank God for personalism. Thank God we're not just babbling about something impersonal. So, any questions on these points?
So you were saying about Advaita Acharya's position and how he had followers, and he has Acharya, you know, as part of his name. If we look at the Panchatattva, I think Srivas was the only other one that has Acharya.
And Thakur.
The Shiva, that's right, Shivas Thakur. And then there's Haridas Thakur.
Gadadhar Pandit.
So I'm just wondering if you could say something about these different parts of their names that they got and what does that mean as far as their, I mean, positions, I guess, ontologically.
Well, Nityananda, for example, I mean, if we followed all the behavior of Nityananda, we would probably be arrested. I mean, he, you know, he would do very unusual things. Nothing immoral, but of course, well, how could he be immoral? He's Krishna, but you know, he was really what's the word? Like they call him? What do they call him? The Avadhut?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, but all these, and you can see. You can see the logic of Krishna appearing in multiple forms. Because as Advaita, he's Acharya. He follows everything strictly, so you can live your life as he lived his life, and it'll all work out very well. On the other hand, Krishna also wants to show that he's independent. Otherwise, you get into these bizarre philosophies like God has to pay a ransom for our sins, or something where, in other words, where there's these laws. Laws, somehow these laws which are above God, and God has to follow the law and pay ransoms, and you know, give his only son because that's the law. And so you can see that when a great personality follows certain principles, you can misunderstand that he's under those rules. So therefore Nityananda comes, so Advaita's Yacharya, Nityananda comes and just really shows the complete freedom of the Godhead. And Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, is very interesting. He's a strict sannyasi, and so in that sense you could say like Advaita, and yet he does inimitable, amazing things, like even manifesting his Mahaprakash, and so on, and sometimes just, you know, he's a Channavatar, the concealed avatar, but sometimes he just takes the mask off and calls for his chakra. As in the case of Jagai Madai. So Lord Chaitanya really just acts like Krishna. He acts like the Supreme. He's the leader. You're the leader of the pack. I mean, Lord Chaitanya really is the leader, and he acts like that, and he follows strictly, but at the same time he does absolutely unique things that only the Supreme Godhead can do. And then Gadadhar Panda, we don't know as, we don't know as much as about, but we have to read more about him. He's, Srivas, of course, is a devotee. Acts as a devotee, really no miracles or anything, just a devotee. Gadadhar really is the Shakti, is the internal potency in the sense that he has a different relationship to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya and Advaita are all kind of like three gentlemen in the sense that, you know, they all have their thing going on, but of course, Lord Chaitanya is the leader of the movement and they follow him, but at the same time, they're like three big figures. Whereas Gadadhar is more, you could see, like the energy serving the energetic. It's interesting because he's like, you know, the internal potency, which is feminine, yet he's, of course, Gadadhar Pandita, and Pandi, you know, Panditya, or learnedness, is, according to the Gita, feminine quality. Krishna says that Narinam, among women, I am intelligence, eloquence, and so on and so forth. Anyone know which verse that is? Very powerful verse about women, which is not quoted so much. Everybody just gets totally, or not everybody, a lot of people get hung up with, you know, mong hi partha vipashritya. I kind of mistranslate that, but here's this beautiful verse about women, which is actually not quoted that much. Anything to put the ladies down.
Well,
that sounds like a very nice explanation.
Sanskrit, because of the Sanskrit.
No, that's something. That's something. No.
These words.
No, someone that obviously doesn't know. No, Krishna. It says here among women, nari. Nara is man. Nari is woman. It says among women. Krishna says, Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham, I am death, takes away everything, and I am the coming to be of all that will be. Ud Bhavascha Bhavishyatam. Very beautiful, isn't it? Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham, Ud Bhavascha Bhavishyatam. It's just such beautiful, powerful, profound. Eloquence. And then Krishna says, Kirti, Sri, Va, cha narinam, among women, I am fame, beauty, speech, smriti, memory, medha, intelligence, dirti, determination, and kshama, forgiveness, or here it's translated patience. So, that's very interesting. Intelligence, Krishna says among women, I am intelligence.
Sure.
What?
Can you say something on this term, medha?
Medha?
I mean, you said it was intelligence. I mean, how does it derive?
By Grihamedi, same word. Literally one whose mind is on a homeland. Grihamedha Dirti Kshama. Actually, whoever said that doesn't really understand Sanskrit. The point is that all these things are also goddesses. There's a god named Kirti, there's a god named Sri. So among women, I am the goddess fame, I am the goddess beauty, I am the goddess speech. These are all goddesses. Did you hear what I just said? That these are all names of goddesses, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, Vaj, Kirti, yeah. These are all names of goddesses. So among women, I am these goddesses. And obviously, these goddesses are the emblem of these qualities, obviously.
Interesting.
Okay. Medha, mental vigor or power, intelligence, prudence, wisdom. Prudence, even a woman's name. So, yes, medha. And the root is, the envelope, please. Med, which is a strong form of mead, M-I-D-H. So we'll go to M-I-D-H. Says there that it's the same as the root meat, M-I-T-H. So around and around we go. Yeah, the dictionaries aren't really helpful here. So anyway, meat is like more like in the mutual words, like mituna, maituna. It's interesting, you know, this whole thing about men and women, the battle of the sexes, you know, it's the men's fault, it's the women's fault. It's actually absurd because, as a general statement, because the very word sexuality in Sanskrit literally means mutuality. Like maitunya, mituna, those words all just mean mutual.
They have the sort of mental energy to match. They can kind of, I don't know.
Wisdom, I mean, if you think about it, often the women raise children. Women often are a sort of stabilizing force that sort of keep the moral principles of the family. Certain wisdom and mental strength. Yeah, and these are all goddesses. These are all goddesses. All these words that Krishna gives here, you'll find them in the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata. They're all goddesses. So it's 10:35. I'm sorry, 10:34. Yes? Yes.
Krishna himself.
Well, think of ourselves. Yeah. If you take seriously this idea of different levels of manifestation, that we have a certain, for example, a certain sense of what our highest self is. Like there are certain moments in which we consider that we're being most fully ourselves, or we're being in the highest sense ourselves. And even though you may at different times be acting in other ways, you think of that. For example, you were saying today or yesterday, that, this morning, you were saying that, that when you're in certain environments, like peaceful environment, or like, you know, at home with devotees in a family environment, that you feel like this is really me, but you have to go into another environment to do different duties. And so, in a sense, that vision of yourself, of who you are in the truest sense, in the highest sense, in the most sublime sense, is a vision, in a sense, that you serve. I mean, you want to serve that self. So this is, you know, it's a crude example, but still, I think it has some validity. That when Krishna, the obvious point is that Krishna, in expanding as Advaita or Nityananda, and then having in these personalities, then make statements like that I want to serve Lord. It's really establishing the ontological hierarchy. That ultimately, just as Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, which Jiva Goswami says is the Mahavakya of the Bhagavatam. So, analogously, in this whole grand manifestation of the Godhead, when he came with Lord Chaitanya, and there's all these different expansions, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya is Swayam Bhagavan. And I think the real intention is to establish that actually here is Swayam Bhagavan. And the other expansions are just that. They're expansions. It's still the same person, but it's, you know, you could say it's not manifesting all the features of the original form of the Godhead. So it's to keep that very clear. It's to keep that very clear so that if someone is attracted primarily to Nityananda or to Advaita, and that's their primary attraction, they say, well, the form of Godhead to which I devote myself, that form of Godhead himself is serving Lord Chaitanya, so obviously I have to serve Lord Chaitanya. So I think it also prevents people from going off the rails and just misunderstanding, you know, and trying to take Nityananda without Chaitanya, or Advaita without Chaitanya, that if you really accept these figures, you have to serve Lord Chaitanya, even if you serve Chaitanya through them. And even Krishna, I think even like that story where Mahavishnu stole the, what was it? Who did he steal? Sons of Sandipani Muni?
Some Brahmin.
Yeah, that's right, the Brahmin. Stole the son of the Brahmin, who then he was rebuking Arjuna. And then it turns out Mahavishnu just wanted to, you know, spend a little quality time with Krishna. So even though Mahavishnu is Krishna, but it's sort of these inconceivable potencies where Krishna really enjoys his own company. It's like Jane Austen talks about people who have the strength or the resources to just to be alone. Like some people aren't very strong in their character, or they just, you know, they can't ever be alone. They always have to be with someone else. Whereas someone who's stronger has that power to really have a good time by themselves sometimes, if not always. And so I'm going to say that, so Krishna, he expands these different forms. We only do one at a time. Like, you can be, like, you know, your student Rupa, or child of your parents Rupa, or spouse Rupa, or, you know, this or that Rupa. But Krishna's the only thing simultaneously. He's fully engaged and present in many, in everywhere, and doing all kinds of different things. And so, you know, when he's doing his Mahavishnu thing, it's like he still relishes Krishna, because that's, he is Krishna, but it's like fun to see. I mean, even we sometimes enjoy looking at pictures of ourselves, isn't it? Or home movies or something, because, you know, in our status, we generally don't get more than home movies. So, I mean, there's no full-length feature Hollywood film, but any of us yet. So, but it can just be interesting, isn't it? I mean, sometimes it's just interesting to see a picture of yourself or to see a film of yourself. Sometimes it can be interesting. And to, isn't it? And so Krishna, these are, I think, ultimately, these are not just like horribly mysterious theological points. It's just, there's something very natural and simple about all this. About Mahavishnu, Krishna, you know, is doing his, you know, doing Mahavishnu. And then it's just, well, that would really be fun to have, you know, to come here to my former Krishna. Because when Krishna expands as Mahavishnu, but he really is Mahavishnu. He's really doing the Mahavishnu show. I mean, he's really doing that. And then in that form of Mahavishnu, to then see himself as Krishna coming is, must be quite interesting. I mean, imagine if you could expand like that in different forms. Not merely as a result of schizophrenia, but some other mental disorder. But I mean, imagine if you could really expand and then just see yourself coming in a different form. It would just be interesting.
It is kind of shocking when you see yourself suddenly in a mirror, like if you're in a store, and then it's like,
yeah,
you get a shock.
I mean, imagine if there's some kind of photography so that, or I mean, I'm sure they do have it, so you could be walking down the street just seeing whatever you're seeing, and at the same time, you're seeing yourself doing that. Well, I mean, there's a camera 20 feet in front of you, and you're seeing both images together. So it's, yeah, I mean, there's something very simple and natural about all this, as much as there's something inconceivably sophisticated about it. It's just Krishna doing the amazing things that he does. It's funny, you know that movie, The Truman Show? Yeah, there's a movie, Jim Carrey, where it turns out his whole life is just like a television show.
No, I have seen it.
Yeah, and he's the only one that doesn't know it, if everyone's watching him. I mean, in a sense, we are being watched. I mean, there's some truth to that, only, you know, it's not just for someone else's sport, like exploiting his life just for their whimsical enjoyment, but we really are being watched. I think I must have told you, or I don't know, I've said it before, but about an essay I wrote when I was like 13 that got all these awards. Because I was a Twilight Zone watcher, and everyone was. I mean, everyone watched it. The world was much simpler back then. There were certain like TV shows that just everybody watched, literally. And there were very few channels, so I wrote the story where a guy goes to work in the morning, you know, goes into an office building, and then suddenly the lights go out, and it turns out that he's just like part of some experiment. There's like these higher beings that are just watching him and observing him and everything. And then suddenly the lights go out on the higher beings. And so, I mean, there was some truth in that. In that, the demigods, or even in this world, I mean, you can think like I'm a leader, or I'm managing these people, But then, what about the beings above you and the beings above them? And you can see as a demigod, it takes so little for to get our false ego going. I mean, if we just like, you know, like in a really elegant way, chew our gum or something, we're like proud of ourselves. I mean, it takes so little to activate our vanity, almost nothing. I mean, you know, like, wow, do you see why I tied my shoes? So it takes the most trivial thing can activate our vanity. And so imagine if you're a demigod. Imagine if you're like literally unimaginably good looking demigod and you have just fantastic opulences and powers. And talk about aristocratic. I mean, imagine the, you know, demigod parties where they're, you know, sort of sipping, you know, mingling, you know, sipping Soma Ross or something. I mean, the demigods are so sophisticated and so materially opulent. They're gods. And yet, that position is insignificant from the point. From Krishna's point of view, we should, as Madhvacharya said, we should always respect the demigods, but still, they're, you know, what are the demigods compared to Krishna? Anyway, today's Advaitacharya's appearance day. Any other point?
Question about the term Acharya.
Acharya.
Yes. Acharya. So, I was reading yesterday that Prabhupada told Yamuna in a letter in 1968 that he gave the definition of an Acharya as an ordained minister. And I'm just wondering,
well, Prabhupada might have used that just for some legal purpose, whatever. I mean, Prabhupada talks about the word acharya many, many, many times, and that's not his standard definition of the word.
I've never heard it before. So.
Well, Prabhupada in those days, you know, there were all kinds of legal issues to get visas and to get recognized as a religious society, tax-exempt status. There are all kinds of things going on back then.
It's one of those terms that
to get devotees out of the draft on religious objectors, conscience objectors.
Yes, it might be very context-specific.
Mm.
68, I guess it was fairly early.
Yeah, there was a big issue back in 68 with the Vietnam War, devotees getting ISKCON recognized as a bona fide religion so that devotees could be recognized as bona fide priests, and tax-exempt status, and Prabhupada's visa. So all these things were going on back then. Gacham, gacham, gacham. Okay, Siddhvaita Acharya Ki Jai.